Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to On the Continent, your one-stop shop for all things European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
And on today's edition, one step forward on the field, two step backwards off it for Barca, but Sunday is D-Day and the future of Messi, Griezmann, Coutinho, et al. Will be put to the vote. We'll run through the runners and riders in the club's presidential election. Also, meet the new Marseille, although it's the same old, and is there life after Gross for Schalke? Or will this weekend bring a new death to die for? David, it's a long-running saga of how Barcelona went from being one of the world's, if not the world's, greatest football club to where they are now with the police storming their building, if you like, and arresting the president. Yep. What has gone wrong?
Well, I think you have to go back to early 2020, really, when things started to really unravel at Barcelona and on various levels. It was revealed then that Barca had paid a company to smear current and former players, including Gerard Pique, Lionel Messi, as well as club presidential candidates, which we'll get onto in a minute, such as Joan Laporta and Victor Font, two of the people currently in the running for the top job. And that's bad enough. But the reason the police have made these arrests and investigated this week, acted, is because of the financial details, which are completely unclear at the moment, apart from the fact that it appears that basically Bartomeu, the former president, has been paying this company more money than he should have for their services. And it is indeed a very, very murky situation that's been uncovered there at Barcelona.
And how has this affected the football, Andy?
Well, the football has been a sort of blessed release from this in 2021. On the pitch, it's been surprisingly good of late. Whether that is too late to really get something out of the season, I don't know. It's definitely too late to get something out of the Champions League. I mean, what I find remarkable is after, as we speak, and we'll come back to the presidential candidates in a minute, because that's the most important result of the week, I think. After the second leg of the Copa del Rey semi-final against Sevilla, Barcelona, to remind everyone, were 2-0 down from the first leg. They came back, having beaten Sevilla in La Liga at the weekend at the Sánchez-Pizjuán, which was notable because, well, let's be honest, Barcelona don't beat anyone decent this season. And they performed well at Notabion and got a deserved win. Gerard Piqué had said after that, and he's always got the right words. He said after that, well, you know, if it could change our season, if we can turn it around in the Copa del Rey. And after that victory, with Piqué himself scoring the goal that took it into extra time before they went in on and won it there, there was, I think, a sort of outpouring of Barcelona fans and Catalan media and on social media saying, oh, well, you know, this is it. Here we go. And you just think, I feel like sort of Scrooge-ish taking away from this moment, which was a really great moment. But for me, the performance, whilst very, very good in the second leg of the Copa semi-final against Sevilla, had more than a hint of the comeback against Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League to it for me. And I'm interested to hear what you think about this, David, because if you look back at the remontada, yeah, 3 years ago against PSG, yes, Barcelona played very well on the night, but it was also accompanied by a little bit of refereeing help, a little bit of the other team totally playing the occasion rather than the game. And we got a lot of that from Sevilla, because before we get to the point where Piqué scores the equaliser in stoppage time to take it into extra time, which does feel like a wonderful moment and should be enjoyed for what it is, Sevilla had their chances despite being in their shell for a lot of the night. They had a penalty, which they missed. They had so many chances to get the ball away before Piqué scored the equaliser. And there's this extraordinary moment where the ball comes to the back post. Diego Carlos just needs to head it out for a corner and he heads it back into play. And then Alba tees it up for Piqué to score. What do you think with the remontada comparison?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand that. And I think these results are almost dangerous in a way, because they give you false hope potentially of a changing of the tide. Oh, we've been going through a bad moment, but we can still produce these epic moments, and you potentially live off them and think that things are on the right track, things are going the right way. Again, great moment, and I found it quite apt in a week of, you know, a lot of presidential elections talk that, you know, the people's president, Gerard Piqué, would score the goal. You know, he's inevitably going to take that role up one day, whenever that may be. So it was a nice moment in that sense. But yes, I definitely err on the side of caution in terms of thinking that the worst is over on a plain sense. There's still a lot of restructuring to do at Barcelona. But the signs have been encouraging. I think the past two games against Sevilla have probably been their best moments of the season so far. They've given the strongest indication yet that there is some potential there. a lot of the younger players shining. And I'd also say about the victory last night, Messi wasn't even in the five best players on Barcelona's team. He was playing, but he wasn't even one of the best players. So that was encouraging as well, that other players could step up. I thought Dembele played really, really well. Pedri, again, as usual. Young Mingueza came in and did very well too. So that, those are encouraging signs. Those are things that you'd look at and say, okay, we can build with this core.
But it is all about the presidential election at the weekend. And of course, you've got the three candidates. You've got Victor Font, you've got Toni Freixa, and you've got Joan Laporta, who's been there before. Now, I'm sure I'm not the only person, David, who noticed Laporta. I'm not saying he's a man full of himself or a man who's putting the cart before the horse or anything like that, but sitting in the presidential box for this return leg against Sevilla, I mean, that's a power move, right?
That's what is known in the business as big dick energy, and that's exactly what he was putting across.
I didn't realize that there was an actual term for that in the business, but thank you.
Indeed, there is. So anyway, yeah, that was a power move. That really was. You know, the fact that he was up there and then he was commenting after the game, saying, "Oh, Barca fans, they deserve more nights like this under me. You'll get those nights." So it was a very, very tactful way of how he did things. And he is the favorite. He's got in what he did in the past at Barcelona, of course, in his first spell, still sits very, very well. He was there from 2003 to 2010, oversaw a very successful period under Frank Rijkaard, and then he moved on to Pep Guardiola as well, an untested, unknown almost Pep Guardiola. And this came off the back of Real Madrid's success, early 2000s. Barcelona hadn't won any trophies since 1999. And Laporta will always be the man. He can always put that top of his list of his mandate. I turned things around at Barcelona last time. They were, they were in a mess. I can do it again.
With that big dick energy in mind, do you mind explaining how important these elections are, and also what the role of a president is? Is that the equivalent of what would be in the Premier League a chairman? And how can the president claim so much of a team's success in that way? And do the fans buy that? Do they buy it? Do they turn around and say, yeah, it was down to you that we are or were the best team ever?
I mean, I think it's such an important thing for Spanish clubs to have these presidents as they do because of the mandate that they put across, the structure that they put across. So not only did they come in as a president, they come in with their presentations of who they want in certain positions. I think the role of a sporting director is going to be very, very important for Barcelona going forward because they have lacked an identity and they need a restructuring. So it will be the first thing a new president puts in place. In this instance, I know Joan Laporta, he really likes the idea of bringing Jordi Cruyff in. He wants to bring in Mateu Almení as well, who was at Valencia. Fantastic success there alongside Marcelino. So little things like that are going to be very, like what he puts out now, are very, very important in terms of the next 5-10 years of Barcelona. What happens now with these presidential elections? They've got two paths. They can either put in a successful institution and what they want to propose, or they put in one that potentially has big holes in it that makes them fall potentially further behind.
I mean, what really works for Laporta is the fact that he inherited a pretty shambolically run club when he took over the club the first time. So I think not just the success speaks for him, but the fact that he, even if you're not a fan, managed fairly successfully to paper over the cracks, at least for a time, and managed to refinance a lot of the debt that they had at the time, which I think is really important. Because one of the, and it's been quite a combative sort of public battle between these three candidates so far, in that they've got very different ideas of how they want to take Barcelona forward. And Freixa has even suggested, well, we're Barcelona, you know, we can be out there signing big players. Whereas no one who's been paying attention really thinks that. I mean, that's crazy. The last thing they need is to go out and saddle more debt on a club that can't handle it, even if it were possible. Because remember, this was a club couldn't scrape together the money to buy Memphis Depay or to release Eric Garcia from the last 6 months of his Manchester City contract last winter. So I think that realistic approach is something that's different, because normally, Dotton, if you're going for the presidency of a large club in Spain, you'll go, right, I'm gonna bring you Mbappe. If you vote me in, I'm gonna bring you Erling Haaland. You know, that's your line. Whereas in this sense, in this context, and not just the context of the world, but the context of Barcelona, it's just not realistic. And you would think even the most optimistic of fans would see that.
I would have thought that with Barcelona, the context has been, so far has been, although this year clearly will be different, but the context has been, I'm going to be the president that keeps Lionel Messi at this club. I'm going to be the president that ensures that Antoine Griezmann lives up to his name and stays at this club. And I'm going to be the president, dare I say it, who finds a buyer for Philippe Coutinho, something of a mistake by the previous president. I mean, that is the context as I can see it. It's about the players that you are either going to keep or dispose of. That's going to be crucial to the presidential election, I would have thought, Andy.
Yeah, you went a bit Proclaimers there in putting out your election promises, which I particularly enjoyed. You know, I'm going to be the man who holds on to Leo Messi. But you're right. That is the 500 million euro question. There's no doubt about it, because I think when we're talking about Barcelona fans taking hope from moments like winning this game against Sevilla, it's not just that it harks back to the old days. And I think David's right about the possible trap of false hope. But if you're a realistic Barcelona fan, and I know I keep talking about realistic Barcelona fans as if they exist, I'm sure there are some that exist, but it's about thinking, is there a way for us to hold on to Messi? Now, personally, I think there is a way for them to hold on to Messi. And at least part of that is the fact that in the last week and a half, we've had Leonardo talking in the French media about, we already know they're close to re-signing Neymar at Paris Saint-Germain, and he believes they're close to re-signing Mbappe as well. That closes the Messi door there. There's no doubt about that. They can't sign those two again with 70 million odd of annual salary between them and then pick up the bill for Messi. So it's starting to close a few doors for him. I just wonder, David, if the situation that we have with some big clubs rebuilding themselves with the pandemic, I just wonder if Messi almost ends up staying at Barcelona by default, and maybe if he can be sold a reason to stay on and not uproot his family and all of that sort of good stuff, then all the better.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been convinced that he would, by hook or by crook, end up staying, purely because of that reason, what you've just ended on there about uprooting his family. I think he's settled in Barcelona, and his family are, he's idolized there. He's got a lovely life there. Why at this stage of your career would you need to unsettle that, uproot that and change things and face potential problems and troubles? I don't think there's any need for him to do that. It's funny, I noticed Toni Freixa, one of the candidates, he said that, you know, Messi can't continue Barcelona unless he restructures his deal. And he's probably been the only one who's the most explicit about that. And that is going to be one of the main issues that they are tasked with. Because I think in the end, he does stay, but he's going to have to stay by changing this deal. I think, you know, I think, like you say, the doors are closing. I think Manchester City clearly want an Aguero replacement, and that means a centre-forward, Erling Haaland, potentially. So that doesn't leave Messi many avenues to go into. And I think staying at Barcelona is ultimately what he will do, and it could end up in being a restructuring of that contract, so the team can be rebuilt around him, I think, and be successful for the next maybe 2-3 years.
Well, it would have been ideal if this Sunday was the 15th of March, then I could have thrown in a Shakespearean quote about beware the Ides of March. But it is Sunday, all eyes will be focused on this presidential election on Sunday, Andy. When will we get a result? Would it be almost immediate?
Well, it's all about the exit polls straight afterwards. Obviously, it would be very much like Blackadder the Third, I imagine. But we are expecting something pretty quickly, I would think, because Barcelona know how much not just their fans, but the whole football world is hanging on this. But there's a lot to pull together because there are more than 87,000 members who have been given the option of voting in person. And that's not just at Camp Nou, but also there's a polling station in Girona and somewhere else. So there's a few bits to pull together. So I wouldn't imagine there'll be anything official until the start of next week. But everyone's absolutely hanging on this. Personally, I'll be quite surprised if it isn't Laporta, but let's see.
On this week's On the Continent, it's a tale of two presidents, isn't it? On the one hand, we'll see what happens in Barcelona, but on the other hand, Olympic Marseille, although not quite Barcelona, nevertheless, a giant once upon a time of European football. They've got a new president and they're drawing a line, are they, under the Andrés Villas-Boas era, or are they not, Andy?
Yeah, well, not just Andrés Villas-Boas era, but the Jacques-Henri Hérault era as well, who was the president who had upset quite a lot of people in Marseille, which is not an especially wise thing to do in a city that absolutely adores its football team. When there are a number of things, but just before Christmas, the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of Marseille fans was Hérault sharing in a interview that he said 95% of the people who work for this club are Marseille fans from Marseille, and for me that's a huge problem. That's one thing to think, that's another thing to say out loud, to say that their passion is a problem, because their passion is what keeps the club alive, is what keeps the club relevant. And so once Hérault went, and that was really after everything that went down at the training ground La Commanderie a month or so ago, the new pick for president is an interesting one. It's Pablo Longoria, who's been a recruiter for a number of clubs, including Newcastle United in the past. He's been sporting director at Marseille since just the start of this season. He's 34 years old and quite a young looking 34 as well. That's meant as a compliment, Pablo, before you say anything. And he is seen as the safe pair of hands to take them forward. Now, this is a really interesting move, I think, giving ownership of the club's day-to-day to someone who's never been a president before, to someone who's only been a sporting director for 6 months, but has convinced them so much with his discourse. And he's an incredibly confident public speaker, not in an arrogant way, but I think in a very poised way. He's impressive, definitely. And what worked really well for him as well is the fact that he's had a really good transfer window. He's managed to dump some big contracts. You were talking about, David, about the restructuring of Messi's contract. The first thing I thought of there was Dimitri Payet, which is something they've managed to do quite well. They've managed to dump Kevin Strootman's undumpable contract off the wage bill, which is very impressive. They managed to get Arek Milikin from Napoli in January, which is the Le Grand Attaquant that they've been talking about forever, the big centre forward that they've been talking about forever. So even if things are still going quite badly on the pitch, to do that and to help recruit Jorge Sampaoli, who is combustible, and I know what you're thinking, combustible coach plus combustible club. What could possibly go wrong? Who cares? It's going to be fun. I think the work that Longoria has done so far is impressive. But now the question is Sampaoli, because he's got this really weird bit of time to bat out before the end of the season. I mean, they lost 2-0 at Lille, who are still top of the table, despite it being 0-0 going into the 90th minute on Wednesday night. And afterwards, Steve Mandanda, the captain and goalkeeper, most experienced player, talked about, well, we've got to do our best for the rest of the season, but then we've got to look forward to next season. So already, a season that they started as the second best team in France, the team that started in the Champions League, and we all know what a mess that was, have now basically written off the rest of this campaign. I mean, Sampaoli's a kind of all or nothing guy. How do you think he's going to receive that from Mandanda, David?
I think he's the sort. I think he's the sort of guy who will just instill an energy immediately. He's, you know, you look at Sampaoli, I always think he's got a crazed look in his eye. You know, you don't know whether he's going to hug you or clip you around the back of the ear. He's got that sort of look about him. and I was going to bring up exactly what you just have. He's just. It means chaos. That's what I love about it. I think the fact that, you know, I think a calming presence in Marseille just wouldn't sit well. I think you need somebody with a bit of personality, a bit of energy about him. I think he will do that. I think Mandanda will, you know, I think he can potentially look back at those comments and think, oh, maybe I was wrong, because I think Sampaoli's input can be that, you know, enormous immediately. He's that sort of guy. And I think we touched on this when I was on the show last time. I think it was when we were talking about Marseille. I think it was after AVB had gone. And I think I said, I think there's quite a nice team there. There's quite a nice structure there. They've got, I think the back line is decent as well. They've got some decent players in midfield as well. I think there's a nice structure there, basically. It just needs a few tweaks. I don't think there's a complete overhaul needed. Longoria, I think that's you know, infusing for him something to work with, the fact that he doesn't have to rip it all up or a complete overhaul. I think there's a nice, you know, team there already. And from now until the end of the season, I think Sampaoli, Longoria, they can work. I think the big goal would be to just assess the squad and see how it is moving forward to next season. And then they can truly plan and make an assault on that top three, top four, and get involved in that exciting title race in France right now.
Yeah, they're going to have to be careful money-wise. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But going back to Sampaoli and what he means, David, and of course he might be relatively restricted by what you can do in the transfer market, and we'll see what sort of squad they have next season. But there is just this sense, isn't there, of him and Marseille being sort of kindred spirits that have been drawn to each other. I mean, he talked about it when he said, you know, there are two types of places in football. There are places where everything's lived with a mania, where everything's really tense and on edge. And there are other places that are more calm. I'm drawn to the tense places. And I think they're drawn to him as well.
He's beaten Sevilla and now Marseille.
well, exactly. And I don't know. You know, we've talked before about how Paris Saint-Germain have always been looking, perhaps until Ancelotti, for this coach who is going to click with them. This big coach that fits the club. I kind of think that since Bielsa, Marseille have been missing something. The supporters have been missing something. Someone who lives it with as much like manic spirit as they do, really.
There is something to be said for the chaos theory, David. There is something to be said for that. It is a legitimate scientific method, as as we know. But ultimately, though, it might, in a way, be the important factor that brings the club back, but does it necessarily translate into results on the pitch?
I think, you know, you look at Sampaoli and what he's been about, his results can go either way. Like Andy said, he's a very all or nothing guy. I remember when he was at Sevilla, he had, I think it was 53 games there. His team scored 97 goals and conceded 71. I think that, in a nutshell, kind of sums up what you're going to get with Sampaoli. I think there's going to be times when the results aren't there, but it is just going to be entertaining and chaos. And sometimes I think Marseille, again, a very, very special breed of fan, kind of like Sevilla's as well. They just want to be entertained. They just want to see a brand of football that they can get behind, and it makes, you know, when they do eventually go back to the stadium, an enjoyable experience. And I think that's going to be key. He had a 50% win rate at Sevilla. And again, that sums him up so, so well. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's at Marseille for a year or two, he has a similar sort of thing. And that's just the way it is. You bring in Sampaoli, you have to, you know, you have to expect to get on the roller coaster and stay on. You're not getting off.
And I think he needs this as well, really, because Atletico Mineiro didn't finish in the most glorious way. Sevilla didn't finish brilliantly after the great start. Argentina, the 2018 World Cup, was a total mess. And our pal Tim Vickery Dotton tells this brilliant story about when they're getting hammered by Croatia in the World Cup. There's the camera following Sampaoli down the touchline. In the last 10 minutes, he's just swearing and insulting every Croatian player who gets the ball. He's just like just become this cranky old man. And that kind of unreasonableness is something to work with, I think, because they have got a way to go. I mean, they're 20 points behind Lyon at the moment in third place. That's just unacceptable for them. And what David touched on about not just the results, but the excitement, I think that's something that's really important. You know, those fans who are so into their club, they've been away from the Velodrome for a year. And I don't know about you guys, but I've thought about the return of all fans to football quite a lot. And when you think about that, you think, what is that first game back going to be like? And if I think what the Velodrome's going to be like, I mean, it's going to be hairs on the back of the neck kind of business, because it's like that anyway. But then you add absence making the heart grow fonder, a new coach who's ready to communicate with those fans in their own language, that language of passion, that language of excitement. I mean, it sets it up beautifully, whether it works results-wise or not.
I've always known that you had a particular soft spot in your heart for Olympic Marseille and the Velodrome ever since I saw your documentary, to be honest. You should really declare an interest, because the chaos theory won you lot an FA Cup, didn't it?
No, that was cold towels at half time.
Well, combustible team, combustible players, the crazy gang is all I'll say to that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
On Clash of the Titles, things got a little awkward when Alex, Vicky and Chris discussed the Incredible Hulk going to the hairdressers.
Have you never had a haircut and gone, that is not what I asked for?
I can't remember what it's like to go to the hairdressers.
Oh God, sorry, that's triggering, sorry.
That's on me,
That is on you.
I forgot.
Because we haven't seen you for such a long time. We forgot you've got no hair.
I'm still bald, so. Yeah, it hasn't grown back magically since we last spoke.
And over on Football Ramble Presents, the On the Continent team have been keeping you across all the European knockouts, as well as a possible title race in Ligue 1 as well.
Icardi can be so frustrating because he can be just one of the most impressive finishers. But you know, when he's not quite on it, he's kind of like the David Blaine in football. Like, he spends a lot of time in a box not doing anything.
Find Clash of the Titles and Football Ramble Presents on your favourite podcast player and listen now.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
On our continuing journey of looking at clubs that are falling apart on the Suites OTC, honestly, we didn't plan it like this, but we've got to talk about Schalke. Dear, oh dear, oh dear. Things get from bad to worse, it seems. So they've sacked the coach, Christian Gross, and anybody, it seems, connected with Christian Gross at the club. And they're in free fall. I mean, on the pitch, it's a five-a-side game for a lot of the opposing teams, it seems like. They're banging in goals left, right and centre. They do look a mess in defence. They don't seem to have an answer up front. And where is their midfield? Do you want to take this first, David?
I think if you look at where they were a few years ago, Champions League, last 16 tie against Manchester City, again, it was a Schalke side then that was a weird crop of players. Again, there didn't seem to be any theme running through it. It just seemed to be lots of different parts from different places. But they still managed to achieve that by hook or by crook. They managed to get there. And then if you look at the fallout from then on, it's a case of, you know, the coaches that they have gone through will obviously get all the attention. You know, their fifth coach this season. I realize it's a Bundesliga record as well. For the first time in history, nobody has gone through that many coaches. I think the decisions behind the scenes in terms of player recruitment have clearly, you know, come to the fore here for me. If you look at the players that they've let go and brought in the replacements, you look at somebody like Weston McKennie, who's gone this week and completed his move to Juve for peanuts, basically. That kind of sums up the sort of deals that they have been doing.
But I think the McKennie thing is quite interesting, David, because, I mean, he was one of Schalke's better players in the back end of last season. That was really disastrous under David Wagner. But on the other hand, I think it's just really quite a testament to the toxic atmosphere there that a player who you think, yeah, he's all right, but why are Juventus signing him, ends up in a more functional environment, for want of a better phrase, because Juventus are transitional in their own way. And all of a sudden, McKennie looks fantastic. I mean, I know players, good players look better with good players around them. But still, I don't think anyone who watched Schalke on a regular basis last season would have seen McKennie as someone who could have succeeded at Juventus. And I think it's really a good mark of how underachieving those players are. I mean, again, you spoke about the team that was in the Champions League 2 years ago. I mean, 2 years ago, they were halfway through that Champions League side against Manchester City, which is extraordinary. And the team's not really that different. I think that's the remarkable thing there. So these players, it's almost as if they've kind of given up, really. I mean, it was bad at the start of the season. A, because we got absolutely hammered by Bayern in the first game. B, because there were players in that team, as we've mentioned on here before, who had been loaned out that they didn't really want, but they couldn't find any takers for, like Marc Uth, like Nabil Bentaleb, like Ralph Fairman, who, until he was injured recently, in fairness, has been one of their better players in recent weeks. But I just think there can be really no pinning it on Christian Gross, because the team, whilst not being anywhere near great, have played their best stuff this season with him in charge. But then you have, as reported in the German media last week, Mustafi, Kolasinac, Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, going to sporting director Jochen Schneider and general manager Sascha Ritter and going, look, you've got to get rid of him. He calls us the wrong names. He talks to us in the wrong language. Sometimes he forgets where he is. And, in retrospect, A, that tells you two things. A, that the players were basically chucking it in, and B, that Schneider and Rita, who were both fired as well on the Sunday, had absolutely no influence to do anything about it. So these players have got to look at themselves. I mean, with those three that I mentioned, none of them are going to be at the club next season. Two loanees and one on a short-term deal. Klaas-Jan Huntelaar arrived with a calf injury and has played 10 minutes of Bundesliga football so far. So it's not so much getting the band back together as it might have been. And when some Schalke fans before the recent game with Dortmund, some ultras invaded the team hotel, one of the questions they put to Jochen Schneider, the sporting director, was, who did the medical for Klaas-Jan Huntelaar? Was it the groundsman? Because clearly something's gone horribly wrong there. And you're right, David, about those mistakes being made upstairs. Now, they've got a new coach in Dimitrios Gramosis, who they've been looking at for a while, who is someone who is very much pitched at them doing a decent job in the second tier. But they're just going to have to gut the squad. There's no other way. Both from an expense point of view, because they're about 250 million euros in debt, and because there's something really rotten in Denmark. You know, this set of players are letting them down time and again. And, you know, when you go through that many coaches, okay, the coach has an input, but it's clearly not the coach. It's clearly this set of players who are not doing it for Schalke, and Schalke aren't doing it for them.
It's always a horrible thing to say, but they are a club that needs to go down to start again. Would you agree with that?
Well, from a sporting perspective, yes. From a financial perspective, it's going to hurt. I mean, they've already started to plan, and they've said, look, we know where we're at. If we're going to fill up the ground, we need to cut ticket prices significantly. So in terms of TV money, in terms of gate money, they're going to take a hit. They'd already put a limit on earning last summer, but now that wage bill is really going to come down. Now, if this means they can go back to zero and start bringing good players out of their academy, then that is a good thing, because you look at some of the players they've brought through, of course, Neuer, Ozil in the past, and now you look at Jan Bozdoyan, who is a very good young midfield player and not scared either. I mean, you look back to other Schalke products like Julian Draxler. What was so good about him is he understood what it meant to play for Schalke, and he didn't shrink into his shell even when he was a teenager. And that is super important in a club like that. And it kind of goes back to what we were saying about Marseille. You need to be a certain personality to deal with the pressure that you get in there. You know, Schalke are one of the best supported clubs in the world in terms of fans coming through the door. I mean, it's over 60,000 every fortnight in normal times. So to cope with that, I mean, when they're in the second division, David, they're going to have, in one sense, an immense power, but in another sense, an immense pressure. Because I don't want to go onto that cliche about it being everyone's cup final when they turn up at Schalke. But can you imagine, like, as an away player in the second tier, going to a team that's got 60,000 fans in, you know, all things being well, and grounds being full again next season?
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I just, the reason I bring it up, I just sometimes think when these clubs that do operate badly and have been doing so for quite some time, it almost encourages them to continue along that path. And who says next season, say they stayed up. Next season, yeah. Next season, they go through another three or four coaches and then they keep doing the same thing over and over again. Sometimes it takes a reset, in this case a relegation, to potentially start things.
I'm not sure if this relegation is the rock bottom, if and when it happens, that you have suggested it is, Andy, in your piece in The Guardian, because the trajectory of, you know, my own team, Charlton, I know it's not a comparison, but nevertheless, is when you get relegated from the top division with no plan and with the players not playing for you, first of all, it's not just wages that come down. A lot of staff, a lot of backroom staff lose their jobs. Yeah. Really ordinary people who are essential ingredients in making the club what it is. And you're looking at a potential another season of relegation. I think you're right when you say other teams will be thinking, we can get a result at Schalke. You know, this is what we've been waiting for. It's a cup final. And I don't think they've hit rock bottom. I think that they might, rock bottom is, you know, a long way beneath where they might be at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point, Dutton, because to go back to the article, I said, have they hit rock bottom? I didn't say that they had hit rock bottom. But I think you're right, because you look at where Hamburg are, and Hamburg have not got as much debt. But, you know, they're having never been out of the top flight, they now can't get back in it. And they look like they might muck it up again this season after their little mini winless run that they're in the moment. Can I just suggest to you what a Bundesliga fight it would be next season if Schalke are going to go, say Hamburg don't come up, and say Hertha, who are just teetering above the trapdoor, go down as well. Can you imagine those three in the second tier of German football? I mean, some would say, well, what a blow that would be to the German top flight. But for the second tier, I mean, it would make it must watch, right?
Okay, it's that point. We've talked about the clubs that are struggling, but give us something to look forward to this weekend, gentlemen. A game of the week from each of you. Andy, do you have a game of the week for us?
I'm going to stay in Germany for my game of the week. It is going to be Bayern versus Borussia Dortmund, which is on Saturday at 5:30, and you can watch it on UK TV. It's really interesting because Dortmund have had this good little mini run. They've won four in a row. They've looked more together. They gave quite a sensible performance in winning Borussia Mönchengladbach in the cup in the week. And with Bayern out of the cup and them in the semi-finals, it gives Edin Terzic a great opportunity to win a trophy before he hands over to Marco Rosa. And so you think, well, they're in a good position to approach the Clásica then. And you think, actually, they'll probably go there and get beaten 4 or 5-0, won't they? I mean, this like level of optimism makes you think that the inevitable is going to happen next. You know, they really need the points because they're chasing the top four now. Eintracht Frankfurt lost last weekend, so and they're only 3 points behind. But I think if they get anything from this, it's a good result because, of course, Bayern are starting to get their ill and injured back as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing how Dortmund stand up to the pressure, and I hope it's more of a contest than the last few games between these two, the Allianz Arena, have been.
And David, do you have an equally tantalising game of the week for us?
Yeah, absolutely. The Madrid derby in La Liga. First place versus second place. We've got Atleti, who are at the moment top of the league. And their lead, what they had at one point, was 8 points clear. That was at the start of February. I think it was, they'd won and they went 8 points clear. Real Madrid, Barcelona were seemingly in some sort of crisis. And things have turned around right now. If Real Madrid were to win this and Barcelona were to win their game away to Osasuna, then we're talking about a 2-point lead that Atleti would have. It would increase the pressure on them immensely so. So yeah, 3:15 on Sunday is the Madrid derby.
Unmissable. Thank you, both of you.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.